We needed data on where the surveyor was, where it was going, and what ships would be escorting it. Without that, we were only playing useless what-if games. Which is why I found myself alone with Skippy in the smaller of our two remaining Theranan dropships, buried inside a small ice-and-dirt comet drifting at high speed toward a Krestang data relay owned by the Fire Dragon clan. Our biggest problem, I had decided with a genius flash of insight while I was in the gym, was not that the Flying Dutchman was only one ship, nor that it had been designed as a star carrier instead of a purpose-built combatant intended to engage enemy ships directly, nor that our Dutchman now had only two reactors instead of the original six. No. After I'd spent a full hour in a brainstorming session that had yielded absolutely nothing, I realized the problem was that we didn't have enough missiles. If we had a whole lot of ship-killer missiles, we could jump in near an enemy ship, launch a cloud of missiles, jump to another nearby location, launch more missiles, and so on. Minimize the risk to the Dutchman with quick jumps, and eventually our barrage of missiles was bound to overwhelm an enemy ship's defenses and score a hit. The surveyor could jump away. We'd track it, and jump to follow. "Hey, Skippy," I said, while bending down to wash my hands in a too-low Theranan sink. "Can we make more missiles? And by we, I mean you? With the equipment we have aboard the Dutchman?" "Nope." That wasn't quite the detailed answer I was hoping for. "Because..." "Come on, Skippy. Usually you want to give me a ton more info than I ask for. And you ignore me and interrupt me until I can dumb it down sufficiently. So my answer to you is a simple nope, you dope. I already told you. What we have aboard is all we're going to have. Some items, like the atomic compression warheads, are impossible to create without very large, specialized facilities. The missiles' propulsion units are also not something I can make out of moon dust and dreams. In addition to the limited number of Theranan Model 30 missiles we have, that's what their designation translates as, I was able to scrape together enough material to create a few ship-to-ship missiles. They are roughly equivalent to a Krestang design that went obsolete about 700 years ago. That's the extent of my miracles, Joe." "Crap. Dang, I figured that. Had to ask anyway. All right, well, can we get more missiles somewhere?" Skippy snorted. "Your time on Newark, away from me, made you dumber, huh?" "Sure, Joey. We can pop over to the local missile mart. They're having a 2-for-1 sale for new customers with good credit. You moron." "I'm serious, Skippy. We've got a ship full of badass Spec Ops troops that are spoiling for another fight. We raided a heavily guarded asteroid. There must be an armory somewhere, or a stores ship, where we can steal some missiles." "Ah? No. You know what? I wonder sometimes if you can even hear yourself talk, or do monstrously idiotic ideas escape your brain without you realizing that you are speaking out loud. The Theranan and Krestang have stores or supply ships that transport materials to battle groups. Those do frequently contain missiles. Those ships are also always escorted by combatant ships, frigates, or destroyers, precisely because they are such tempting targets." "Damn. I'll scratch that idea. Raiding armories, another idiotic idea you mentioned, is close to impossible. The facilities that Theranan use to manufacture missiles and atomic compression warheads are always on large, rocky, airless, or nearly airless planets or moons. They are uninhabited planets or moons in case of industrial accidents, which happen from time to time. The facilities are buried very deep underground. I'm talking kilometers underground, and they extend for dozens of kilometers or more. Making atomic compression devices is a very energy-intensive process. The Theranan use them because their explosive yield is near that of a nuclear weapon, without the radiation that is banned by the rules, remember?" "Yeah, I remember. Rules enforced by the Rindaloo and Maxulks on the lesser species that did the fighting for them. Rules intended to keep the war from spiraling out of control and damaging precious habitable planets that the two dominant species cared about." "You're right. No way we can raid a place like that. And whatever plan we come up with, it needs to make do with the weapons we have now." "Unfortunately, yes. Also unfortunately, I still do not see a way this ship can destroy your surveyor and its escorts. Destroy that ship in a way which avoids the Theranan realizing the surveyor was the target." "Uh-huh. Damn it. There has to be a way to do that. We just haven't thought of it yet." "In an infinite multiverse of probabilities, you may be right. In this particular localized space-time, I do not see it." which is again why Skippy and I were in a dropship frozen under the surface of a dirty snowball, hurtling out of control on the very outskirts of a star system controlled by the Fire Dragon Clan. Burying a dropship in a comet was the best idea we had for how we could sneak Skippy close enough to the relay station so he could ransack it for data. He needed to fly within 300,000 kilometers to do that, and as the relay would not simply dump all their data to us if we asked nicely, we had to sneak in close. It was a chicken-and-egg problem, Skippy explained. The access codes we acquired when Skippy took over the Flying Dutchman had since been changed in the normal rotation schedule followed by the Theranin. With such codes, we could have simply jumped in near the relay, requested a data dump, and been on our way. Data relay stations were maintained at the edge of star systems, so Theranin ships could exchange information without having to risk traveling into the web of gravity wells and relatively close confines of the star system. The only easy way to get data from a relay, including the full set of access codes, was to have a proper access code, which we didn't have. Thus, it was a classic chicken-and-egg problem. A dropship, even a small dropship with an optimally functioning stealth field, could not get close enough to a relay station. While a stealth field would conceal the dropship, the relay station's sensor field would detect some hidden object distorting the field and investigate closely. Perhaps the investigation would take the form of a missile or maser beam strike. Which is why we, actually Captain Desai, had come up with the idea of us capturing a dirty snowball, carving a dropship-size hole in it, then covering the hole after we stuffed a dropship in there. We rendezvoused with a small comet in an uninhabited neighborhood star system and got it wrestled into a docking bay by a dozen people in powered suits. The damn thing still massed a couple tons, and we had to be very careful even in zero gravity not to squash anyone by a clumsy move. Once in the landing bay, which was kept in cold vacuum, we carved out a hole. Skippy and I got into the dropship, and the guys in suits carefully maneuvered us into the hole and covered it. "This is an awful, idiotic, terrible, terrifying idea," Skippy lamented. "An idea of epic, incredible, mind-blowing stupidity, Joe. Truly, in the history of the galaxy, I can't think of anything that even comes close." "What?" I asked. "This is a hell of a time to tell me now, Skippy. It was your idea to encase the dropship in a comet." "Yeah, that idea is truly brilliant." "Then what about this is terrifyingly stupid?" "I didn't think you would be flying the dropship, Joe." "We are doomed." "Very funny." "Dutchman, this is Barney. We're ready in here."
"Roger that, Barney. You sit tight in there," Desai replied.
Desai then accelerated the Dutchman in normal space, so that when the comet was dropped off, it would have the precise course and speed to fly by the relay station in the guise of uninteresting, ordinary space junk that hung around the edges of all solar systems. The Dutchman jumped in, gently released the comet, maneuvered to a safe distance, and jumped away. We were on our own. If all went well, we would fly by the relay station in 22 hours, and the Dutchman would jump back in to recover us in 26 hours after that. Yay! 48 hours alone with Skippy. He was as thrilled about it as I was. "I hope you didn't eat anything gassy for breakfast. And damn, could you lay off the aftershave a bit? Oatmeal and wheat toast for breakfast. No worries there, Skippy. And I'm not wearing aftershave. I didn't bring any when we left Earth, you ass." He made a sniffing sound. "Ugh, so that's your natural smell? Next time you should reconsider not bringing aftershave. Oh, damn, and there's not even a shower aboard this thing. This is going to be a long trip." "Uh-huh. You want to play chess or something? With you? Ha! Maybe a game of Go Fish." We mostly left each other alone after that. I read a book on my iPad, tried to nap, ate a simple lunch, and read some more, while Skippy did whatever asshole beer cans did. When I finished the book, I tried playing chess against my iPad, concluded my always miserable chess skills may have somehow deteriorated, and glanced over at Skippy, who was strapped into the co-pilot seat. "Hey, Skippy, you there?"
"I'm here. Always. What's up?"
"Something's bothering me. Terrifies me, actually." "How did that Theranin destroyer squadron set a trap for us?"
Because if they know humans are flying this ship, then even if they don't know we messed with the wormhole, we are totally screwed."
Did I screw up somewhere, Skippy? Did I get us all killed? Not the crew here, I mean. Did I get all of humanity killed?"
I started to say.
"Joseph Arthur Bishop," Skippy fairly shouted. That set me back in my seat.
Wow, only my mother uses my middle name, and only when she's pissed at me.
Whew. Well, you weren't ever going to shut up so I could get a word in.
Rest easy, Joe. You didn't screw up. To be specific, your myriad screw-ups are not why we got ambushed by the little green men. No way were they waiting for us. No way in hell. If the Theranan new monkeys are flying this ship, they would have established a layered defense with battleships at the center. Battleships can project significantly more powerful damping fields. We would have had zero chance to jump away if we had encountered a task force centered around battleships. The Theranan would never have assigned such a vital mission to a single squadron of destroyers. If they knew one of their star carriers had been stolen, and they thought they knew where it is, they'd send an entire battle group at least. The Theranan would not screw around with half measures.
He had not yet convinced me.
I hear you, but what are the odds that we would jump into a trap like that? Don't give me the odds calculated to 100 freaking decimal points. I'm asking a real-world question here, not mathematics.
No need to crunch numbers. I think we didn't jump into a trap at all.
How you figure that?
Simple. If it was a trap, there would have been a lot more ships waiting for us, and we would be dead. Or you monkeys would. I'd be drifting in space, wishing I was dead. At least being in hard vacuum for millions of years would get the monkey smell off me.
Mostly. What I think happened is that Elder Site that I thought had not yet been discovered actually is known to the Theranan. They took everything useful out of it a long time ago. While they were ransacking the Elder Site, they built up that system as a military base to defend the site against the Jarapha. That star system was closer to Jarapha territory before the recent wormhole shift. The Theranan would have fortified the area to protect their assets. Since they stripped the site, I believe the Theranan have continued using that system as a secret military base. As I told you, the Flower's crappy Kristang sensors are lucky to detect a star in a star system. Our beat-up frigate has no chance to find a military base that the Theranan wish to keep secret.
Great theory, Skippy. It doesn't explain why that destroyer squadron had us surrounded as soon as we jumped in.
That may have been partly my fault. A teensy, infinitesimal bit my fault.
What?
That surprised me.
You got some splaining to do, Lucy.
Actually, Ricky Ricardo never said that on the show. That is a myth. Similar to how people commonly say,
I never saw the show, Skippy. That was before my time. It's a pop culture thing.
Oh, got it. I'll make a note of it.
And?
And I said I'll make a note of it.
Duh, man, your mind wanders sometimes.
I rolled my eyes. I meant, and, back to how our getting ambushed may have been partly your fault.
Damn, Skippy. We were talking about that like 5 seconds ago. How could you forget in that short a time?
5 meat sack seconds, dum-dum. For me, your species could have gone from ignorant apes living in trees to sentient beings in the same time.
I say could have, 'cause... you know, you are still ignorant apes.
Don't try changing the subject, Skippy.
Damn, the monkey is on to me, he muttered.
All right. I think that destroyer squadron was there for training or something like that. Those destroyers or some stealth satellites detected the Flower jumping in because a blind man could have seen that. The Theranan stayed quiet, probably wondering what the Helikristang frigate was doing there. By itself, a Kristang ship could not have traveled all the way to that star system. The Theranan must have been very, very curious. After the Flower jumped away, the Theranan knew they hadn't been detected, and they figured the Flower would be back, with more ships. That's when those destroyers got into position, to establish a damping field that covered where the Flower was likely to jump in. But that also explains why their damping field wasn't originally tuned to prevent a Theranan ship from jumping away. They expected Kristang ships, not a star carrier. Us jumping in must have surprised the hell out of them. That surprise, their hesitation before returning the damping field, is how we got away at first.
Uh-huh. Makes sense, I agreed.
Does not explain how it is partly your fault.
Damn! I was hoping you forgot about that by now. Why don't you have your typical short attention span when I need it?
Here it is, Joe. I may have been showing off a little. I programmed our jump in to be almost exactly where the Flower had jumped out. Serves me right for caring about impressing a barrel of monkeys. Why should I care what ignorant apes think, right?
Though he was certainly an arrogant shithead, he didn't need to feel guilty about something that wasn't his fault.
So you were a little more accurate than you needed to be. That didn't affect anything. Even if you were off by 1,000 kilometers, those destroyers would have surrounded us. That was the best spot for us to jump into, right?
No. And right there is the problem.
That was the best spot for the flower to jump into, considering that ship's crappy jump drive. The Dutchman could have jumped in much closer to the Elder site. That is why I feel guilty, Joe. The Theranin surrounded the place they expected Kristang ships to jump in, and that's where I took us. If I jumped us in closer to that moon like I should have, we could have been on the edge of the damping field, and could have gone much further with that first jump away. He sounded miserable. I understood how he felt. The conversation had started with me feeling miserable and guilty, thinking I had nearly gotten us all killed. Crap, Skippy. You let me feel guilty all this time, when it was your fault?
A teensy bit my fault. That's all.
His voice sounded hurt. I'm sorry, Skippy. I guess I was kind of hoping that if those Theranin had a way to track the Dutchman, we could do the same thing and solve our problem of hunting down that surveyor ship. They got lucky, Joe. There are no shortcuts. We continued racing along through empty space in our dirty snowball, slowly tumbling at one rotation every 46 minutes. There was no indication the relay station considered us a threat, even though their long-range sensor grid had seen us 2 hours ago. We were an innocent, uninteresting, dirty snowball, no different from the billions of such objects forming a loose cloud around the star system. We would not pass close enough to the station to be in any way a threat. We hoped. All was going well, until 4 hours before the closest point of our flyby, when Skippy sounded an alarm. Gamma ray burst. Multiples. 8 Kristang ships just jumped in. They're sort of between us and the relay. Damn it. They are moving very roughly parallel to us. Unless they change course, we're going to pass uncomfortably close through their formation about a half hour after we fly by the relay. Oh, this is bad. Crap. They see us? They know we're here? I asked in a panic. Well, do they see this comet? Yes, certainly they do. Do they know our dropship is under this ice? No way. Or I don't think so. Unlikely. Very unlikely. What the hell are they doing here? Relay stations are common rendezvous points, Joe. This is not entirely unexpected. Unfortunate, not unusual. They could be... Yes, they are exchanging data. Shh. Be quiet a minute, will you? I'm listening to them. Skippy was silent a few minutes. So was I, although Skippy wasn't holding his breath like I was. Darn, Joe, we got a problem. The good news is those ships are simply exchanging data and going to be on their way. They're not aware of us, and they're not looking for us. The bad news is they are waiting for another ship to join them, and while they're waiting, they will be engaged in a cross-decking operation, exchanging supplies and crews between ships. They will have crew outside the ships in suits and dropships flying around between ships. They will not want a ball of ice creating a hazard by flying near them. It is possible they will hit us with a maser to knock us onto a different course, and so avoid their formation. I'm sorry. Damn it. What can I do? Hey, if you're by yourself, you're small enough they won't see you, right? Sure, I can make myself small as a tube of lipstick, and I can become essentially invisible to sensors. Why? Because, I said as I unstrapped him from the seat. You can fly by that relay station by yourself. You don't need this dropship. Whoa, wait just a minute, monkey brain. You're going to toss me out an airlock? For real this time. And very gently. I'll give you a little push, you float away and fly right by that relay. That way if the Kristang do hit this comet, you won't be affected. You will be affected, you ass, he shouted. That's a risk. The army did mention there might be risks involved when they gave me a rifle. I had to sign a form about it. Yeah, risk of you shooting yourself in the foot, you idiot. Joe, this is, and I'm adding emphasis here, a gargantuanly stupid idea, even by monkey standards. As I put on my spacesuit helmet, I responded, I am open to other ideas, Skippy. Other ideas where you fly by the relay without being detected, get the data we need, and are safely taken back aboard the Dutchman. You got anything like that? No. Great. Then we, in this case, no means not yet. Damn, you monkeys are impatient. Listen, Skippy, in meat sack time, you've had only seconds to think up an alternative idea. In your time, what? You had, what, years? If you haven't thought up something yet, you probably won't, because there is no alternative. You'll be fine floating in space for a while by yourself. I'll be fine here. Define fine for me, in terms of you. If they hit this ice ball with a maser... I'm a soldier, Skippy. The mission comes first, okay? There is one of me and billions of monkeys. Damn it! Now you've got me saying it. Billions of humans on Earth. This mission has almost no margin for error. You told me our only likely chance to track that surveyor ship is to pull data off that relay. I need you to do that for me and not to worry about me. Can you do that?
I have to worry about you, Joe. You are a particularly dumb monkey in an unforgiving universe. You clearly can't take care of yourself. You're the monkey who says, "Ooh, leopard has pretty spots, I should touch it."
Skippy, I said as I stepped into the airlock. You get the data from that relay and I promise you, I will never try to pet a leopard. Deal?
I do not like this, Joe. I do not like this one tiny bit.
It's not like I'm jumping for joy about it either, Skippy. Do we have a deal?
There was a heartfelt sigh, then, I suppose.
Damn, why can't you pick this time to come up with one of your crazy ideas?
This isn't crazy enough for you?
I see your point. Let's get this over with.
When the hole in the comet was covered over, it wasn't filled in all the way. What they'd done was stretch a thin tarp across the top of the hole, then sprayed water, which quickly froze, to cover the tarp about a meter thick. To make it look like the rest of the comet, they packed dirty snow on top. From the outside, you couldn't tell there had ever been a hole. Getting out of the airlock, I gently flew up to the bottom of the tarp and used a cutter on low power to make a hole just big enough for me to fit through. Skippy advised me so that we timed my cutting through into space while that side of the comet faced away from the relay station and the Kristang ships. I stuck my head and shoulders out and held Skippy up.
Which way?
Off to your left. Give me a good push or we won't get far enough apart for it to matter. On three, okay?
3, 2, 1. Now.
Holding on with my feet wedged into the ice and with my left hand, I threw Skippy as hard as I could with my right. He quickly disappeared from view.
Was that good?
Too late now, anyway.
Yes, that was a good push. I will come another 3,000 kilometers closer to the relay station.
Stop talking now. You have to go silent. I can talk to you, but you can't reply.
Good luck, Colonel Joe.
Good luck, Skippy, I mouthed silently.
Before the comet rotated so the hole was visible to the Kristang, I covered it again as best I could by melting snow with the cutter and tried to pack it over the opening. The best I could do was a half-assed job. I had to hope none of the Kristang were bored enough to look closely at a ball of ice passing by in deep space. With the hole covered well enough, I went back into the dropship. This time I left my helmet on. If the Kristang hit the comet with a maser, I wanted to have a supply of oxygen in case the dropship got a hole poked in it. Also, I powered up the dropship's stealth field, setting it as tight as possible around the hull. A tight stealth field drew extra power. Power I had plenty to spare, as I didn't plan to run the engines. On its normal setting, the stealth field would have extended partly outside the comet, and the Kristang would have become suspicious why the comet had suddenly changed its appearance. The last thing I did was activate the dead man switch for the missile warhead strapped onto the seat behind me. If things went south, we could not risk the Kristang discovering a human or human remains in a Theranan dropship. Either I could let go of the switch, or if I was already dead or seriously injured, my hand would let go on its own, and I, the dropship and comet, would become a cloud of particles. Skippy would be safely away, not that a mere missile warhead could hurt him. The Dutchman would eventually pick him up, he would contact the ship, and Chang would continue the mission. That would not be my first choice, in case you were wondering. There were many, many cheeseburgers I wanted to enjoy before I died. Then I waited. It didn't take long. Skippy warned me, "Joe, they're firing a maser at you." I closed my eyes and mentally prepared for searing pain and death. It didn't happen. All I felt was the comet shaking slightly and moving around, jiggling kind of, gently vibrating.
"In case you're wondering why you are still alive," Skippy said, "they're using a low-power maser. They are not trying to blast the comet apart. That would create a big hazard for them, as then they would have to keep track of many small objects instead of one medium-sized one. The low-power maser is heating up one side of the comet boiling off ice, and that's making the comet change course. In case you were wondering why I didn't mention this possibility before, I wasn't sure this is what they would do for certain. Didn't want you to get your hopes up." Sometimes the Kristang like to use comets for target practice, and that would not have been good for you. Nothing to worry about for now.
For now? Damn, it was driving me crazy that I couldn't talk back to him.
Trying to relax, I took in some deep breaths as the comet vibrated gently around me. Not too relaxed.
I had to remind myself not to let go of the dead man switch by accident. The worst part, if that happened, would not be me dying by accident. It would be Skippy concluding that in the end, I truly was a dumbass monkey. Then the comet lurched to one side. "Not to worry, Joe," Skippy called. "A chunk of ice broke off, that's all. They've switched aim to boil that chunk of ice to nothing, and they're done. They're switching back to the comet." Now, this could become a problem. The comet is rotating so that the maser will hit the hole in about 12 minutes. Voids in comets are not that unusual. However, the hole we made is rather large for the size of the comet. And when the tarp is exposed, that will certainly look suspicious. Let me think on this. And while I'm thinking about it, he added, don't do anything stupid like trying to use the dropship's engines or thrusters. He added that as my hand was poised on the controls to power up the engines. I put my hand back in my lap. Think faster, Skippy, I said to myself. Now that I wasn't expecting to die immediately in a sizzling maser cannon beam, it would suck to die like this. Got it, Skippy said excitedly. Sort of, I think. The good news is this is going to be cool either way, because I've never done this before. The bad news is, it could be a spectacular failure. Thus, guaranteed cool either way, huh? Coolest, of course, if you survive. That goes without saying, right? Man, I wish you could see this. It is majorly cool. To me. Maybe not to a monkey. Still, totally cool. What was driving me crazy was not that I didn't know what idiot thing he was trying. It was not being able to interrupt him rambling on and on. The comet's vibration changed. I don't know what was going on or how to describe it. It simply felt different. Maybe like there were two sources of vibration. It's working, Joe. I think... Maybe... Yep, it's working. Sort of. Close enough, right? Heh-heh. At the sound of heh-heh, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. What the hell was he doing? In case you're wondering what I'm doing, it's only 100% gold-plated grade A awesomeness, Joe. Although when you think about it, part of that expression doesn't make any sense. You're trying to convince your audience that something is genuinely, indisputably awesome, right? Then why would you brag about something being gold-plated? Why not solid gold? Maybe I got the expression wrong. Because you could gold-plate a dog turd, and that's not awesome, that's just gold-plating on a dog turd, right? Anyway, what was I saying? I forget. Couldn't have been too important. Oh, wait! I know! I was going to tell you the awesome thing I'm doing. Solid gold awesome. Let's get that straight. This is awesome goldness all the way to the center, buddy boy. I could have prayed for death right then, if that would get him to shut the hell up. Where was I? He continued. Oh, yeah. Explaining what I'm doing. Ha! Explaining high-order multidimensional physics to a monkey. What am I thinking? I'll break it down for you Barney style. Joke intended. Thought that was pretty clever of me. Man, I never get tired of that one. Only you, Joe, would combat an alien invasion in an ice cream truck. Not even a nice ice cream truck. A crappy ice cream truck. So, here goes. This will blow your tiny monkey mind. I'm warping space-time in a tiny, tiny area to make the comet spin just a bit differently than it was. Differently enough that the maser beam will miss the hole we made. Cool, huh? Hell, you know what? I've never warped space-time in such a tiny local area. The math is completely different. It's interesting. In fact, I don't think it's ever been done before. I'm the first. Cool, huh? He rambled on and on like that a while. I'm not sure how long. I stopped listening. Maybe he talked the whole 12 minutes. He must have. He was talking when the 12 minutes passed. About what, I don't remember. It didn't matter. It was good simply to hear his voice. To hear someone talking to me while my hands shook and I sat in the dropship alone with my fear. Being alone is bad. Being afraid is terrible. To be afraid and alone is the worst empty feeling. You still listening, Joe? I think you're good. I think you'll be safe. That maser should cut off in a couple minutes. The Kristanger about satisfied they've pushed it safely out of the way. The dead man switch was still tightly clutched in my hand. Waiting out the time until the Kristang hopefully turned off their maser beam, I held the switch in both hands as insurance against one hand growing tired. Finally, Skippy gave me the all-clear signal. You're good, Joe. Maser is off. The Kristang commander is happy the comet will miss their formation. They are proceeding with the cross-decking operation. Wow. They boiled off more of the comet than I expected. more than was strictly necessary. It's a good thing we didn't pick a smaller comet, or part of the dropship may be exposed by now.
You can turn off the stealth field to save power, Joe.
Hey, good thing they didn't need target practice to tune their masers, huh?
That would not have been good.
Anywho, I'm going to stop talking in about 18 minutes. I'm approaching the relay station and I will need to concentrate, or all this will be for nothing. In a couple hours, we will have drifted far enough apart that I won't be able to talk to you. Until I have to go, here is a medley of show tunes to keep you company.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
Show tunes. Freaking show tunes. Like my grandparents' show tunes. He sang one tune after another for the whole 18 minutes, then abruptly cut off without a goodbye. I didn't hear from him after that. Either we drifted too far away or he downloaded a whole lot of data from the relay and was busy sorting through it. Carefully deactivating the dead man switch, I put it away, and I also safed the missile warhead. 14 hours later, the dropship's sensors picked up a gamma ray burst, then 7 others. The Kristang task force must have jumped away. Good riddance to them. 26 hours after I lost contact with Skippy, the dropship console alerted me to a single nearby gamma ray burst, and the Dutchman pinged me, one brief signal. I sent back a short ping to let them know about Skippy and pick him up first message. They must have been curious about why the comet wasn't where it was supposed to be and why Skippy wasn't with me. 16 minutes later, another gamma ray burst, then nothing. Silence. Then I was alone for another 19 hours. 19 hours, not knowing what was going on, not knowing whether something bad had happened to the Flying Dutchman. It could not possibly have taken 19 hours for them to contact, locate, and pick up Skippy. So had something happened to him? Had the Kristang ships somehow detected Skippy and intercepted him? Had he been detected as he ransacked the data banks of the relay station? No. If the Dutchman had pinged Skippy and he hadn't responded, they would have contacted me again right away. For some reason they had contacted Skippy, then whatever happened, they hadn't been able to pick me up. Crap. There weren't many good options for me. The dropship could recycle oxygen for one person for almost a month, and drinking water wasn't a problem as long as I stretched out the supply to match the oxygen. Food was a problem. I'd only brought along enough sludges for a week. What the hell was I going to do? The navigation system told me the comet's new course was taking it further away from the local star, and the comet's next closest approach to the relay station would not be for over 1,000 years. Projecting out 10,000 years, the limit of the dropship computer's ability, the comet would not get close enough to the star to boil off the remainder of the ice. The dropship would remain hidden for at least another 10,000 years. Long enough. Poking around the dropship, I did not find a stash of food that I didn't know about, other than a plastic bag with one lonely peanut tucked into a pouch on the side of the co-pilot seat. Someone flying or training in the dropship must have left it there. One peanut. I stared at that peanut for a long time before wedging the bag into a gap in the pilot console. The only sludges I'd brought along were plain banana flavor. No one liked them as they tasted bland and artificial. The only reason I'd brought them along was to get rid of them. Now they were my only food supply. That was bad planning. What the hell, right? I'd ration sludges to give the Dutchman maximum time to come pick me up. Then when the sludges ran out, I would eat that peanut. The controls could be programmed to slowly decrease the oxygen supply. I'd been assured that I would gradually fall asleep and it would be almost painless. Huh. My high school classmates had not voted me most likely to end up encased in a comet orbiting the outer reaches of an alien star system. Somehow they had missed that one. They hadn't voted me class clown or anything cool like that either. Crap. Now that I thought about it, I'm sure that by now some joker had cut out a picture of Barney and pasted it over my photo in our senior yearbook. Like that mattered now. Having nothing else to do, I set a timer for 10 hours until my next sludge. Turned the lights down, and tried to get some sleep. And wouldn't you know it, just as I was drifting off to sleep, the console alerted me to another gamma ray burst, and the Dutchman pinged me with a brief signal. Taking you aboard shortly, ETA 4 minutes. I felt some jostling, then a hard bump, then a shudder. Then I heard Skippy's voice again.
"Hey, Joe! Good to have you back," Skippy shouted.
After the ship recovered me, it had to jump away. It would have taken too long to fly through normal space to pick you up. The ship would have been exposed for too long. We waited until you got far away from the relay before we risked coming back. Hold tight. They're cutting a hole for you. Should only be a minute before you can come out.
Thanks, Skippy. It's great to hear your voice again. Were you successful? With the relay, I mean?
We're in luck, Joe. Although now that I think about it, that expression is ambiguous, isn't it? Luck can be good or bad. No matter. In this case, our luck is good.
Success? Yes. Sort of.
Come aboard and I'll give you a full briefing. You, better shower first, huh?
Chapter 29. Skippy barely waited for me to take my shirt off before he began the briefing. Here's what I found, Joe. Not sure if in the end it is good news or bad news.
I thought you wanted me to take a shower first.
Please do. However, you really don't smell a whole lot better after a shower, so there's no reason to wait, unless you prefer to wait.
No, I said as I unlaced my boots. Go ahead.
My expectation that the Fire Dragon clan would have information about the Surveyor ship's mission was partly correct.
Great.
Before I stepped, or, to be accurate, kneeled down in the shower, I pressed the button and checked the water temperature in case Skippy decided to play a practical joke on me and make the water ice cold.
You know where the Surveyor ship is and where it's going?
No, unfortunately. No, the Fire Dragons have no information about the Surveyor ship or about the single destroyer that is serving as escort.
Then what could be the good news?
You said two of the Fire Dragons were going on the mission to Earth and that the Surveyor ship had to pick them up somewhere.
I did say that. Can you hear me, Joe?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine, I said, with my head under the cascading water. The hot water washing days of grunge off my skin felt great.
Good. Yes, two Fire Dragon clan leaders are going on the mission to Earth. They paid extra for the privilege, because they do not trust the Theranin. For very good reasons, based on a long history, the Kristang do not trust the Theranin. The Theranin don't trust the Kristang, also for very good reasons. The Theranin enjoy insulting and humiliating the Kristang every chance they get, which is why these two Fire Dragon leaders were not instructed to rendezvous with the Surveyor ship. They will instead be picked up by a pair of tanker support ships. To travel aboard such low-status ships is a deliberate, very grave insult, and the Kristang know it is an insult. They also can't do anything about it.
I feel terrible for them. We should send a harsh note to the Theranin. Where are they going to meet these tanker ships, and when?
Where is a question I do know the answer to, and I've programmed a course into the navigation computer. When is the problem, Joe? The Kristang are arriving at those tankers 3 days from now. We can't get there that quickly.
Crap. You know where those tankers are going, though, right?
No, I do not. That is not the type of information the Theranin saw fit to provide to the Fire Dragon clan.
Well, hell, Skippy. I hit the button to shut off the water.
Damn it. Why did he talk to me so often when I was in the shower?
This was all a waste of time, then?
We're too late?
That was a bitter pill to swallow. Getting messages from that data relay had been our only chance to intercept the Surveyor ship before it reached Earth.
Wait. There's always a chance something goes wrong, that the Kristang could be late to the rendezvous.
I suppose so. You haven't heard? I clicked the button to open the intercom to the bridge.
This is Bishop. Skippy programmed a new course into the nav system. Initiate jump as soon as possible.
Aye, aye, Chang responded without asking questions.
We can't waste any time getting there, Skippy. Is there any way you can shorten the trip, do some magic with wormholes?
I already did, Joe. The course I programmed does include one shortcut by manipulating a wormhole.
You didn't? There's got to be something we can do.
Let me think on...
Joe, if you will please shut the hell up for a moment. You haven't heard the whole story.
Oh. Sorry, Skippy, that was rude, me interrupting you.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you.
As I explained, these two support ships are primarily tankers. They carry fuel that will be transferred to the Surveyor before it breaks off from its escorts and begins its long solo journey to Earth. The Kristang are going to meet those two tankers in an uninhabited star system, where the tankers will be refueling by siphoning the atmosphere of a gas giant. The tankers, logically, and the Theranin can be ruthlessly logical, will not want to carry their fuel load further than they have to. That tells me the tankers will meet the Surveyor ship somewhere close to where they tank up with fuel. Before you make a typically stupid comment about why I'm bothering to tell you this, I believe those tankers will take several days to complete their refueling operation.
We should be able to reach that star system before those tankers depart.
Skippy? That's fantastic.
Man, I didn't know how much more I could take of hopefulness, sudden crashing despair, and back to hopefulness.
Why didn't you say that first?
I tried to, you big dope. Only you kept flapping your lips, blah blah blah.
Damn, you flap your lips so hard sometimes I think you're going to take off like a bird.
Sorry. Okay, so we know where these tankers will be, and we know they will be meeting the surveyor ship after they finish pumping their tanks full at this gas station. It's a planet, Joe, not a gas station. The operation to siphon the proper gases, you know what I mean, Skippy.
It's complicated, that's what I was going to say.
We still have the problem that we don't know where the tankers are going after they fuel up, and we have no way to follow them without them knowing they are being followed.
I finished buttoning a shirt and pulled pants on.
Don't worry about that, Skippy. While I was stuck inside that comet, there was a lot of time to think. I have some ideas.
You having an idea. That's what scares me.
The Flying Dutchman was jumping like clockwork on our way to the star system where the two Theranan support ships should even then be filling their tanks with fuel. According to Skippy, we should arrive well before those ships were ready to depart for their rendezvous with the Surveyor. Everything was going great. Great, except that we still did not have a realistic plan for us to successfully attack the Surveyor ship, or, equally as important, a way for us to attack in a way that the Theranan would think the Surveyor had been destroyed in an ordinary ship-to-ship action by a Gerapha force. Although, an idea was forming in my mind.
"Sir, we may be missing something," Smythe said while we were sitting in the galley, bouncing around ideas for attacking the Surveyor and its escort ships. "I read the after-action report from your first mission. The Kristang ships that were attached to the Dutchman, you decided to jump them into a gas giant planet."
He looked around the compartment and people nodded.
"Because you were concerned they would eject drones that contained those ships' flight logs. A drone's logs would have told the Kristang or Theranan that a Kristang frigate and a Theranan star carrier had been taken over by a hostile force."
"Hey," Skippy protested, "I wasn't hostile. Perhaps I wasn't as polite as..."
"Skippy, that's not what he meant." I suppressed a laugh.
"Oh, understood. Hostile in this case means taking over their ships and killing all of them. I guess that could be considered hostile," Skippy grumbled. "In certain cultures."
Smythe nodded.
"Right. Well, then, when we attack these ships, assuming by that time we have some plan to destroy them, during the attack those ships will eject stealth drones. Those drones may tell the Theranan that their ships were attacked by one ship, and they might even be able to determine that one ship is a former Theranan ship."
"It's possible," Skippy admitted. "During a fight, if our stealth field is damaged, our disguise as a Gerapha the ship won't hold."
"That's the problem, sir," Smythe concluded. "We have to both destroy those ships and do it in a way that the Theranan think it was an ordinary Gerapha raid. Those drones will blow our cover story."
"Yeah, Joe," Skippy said, excited. "That's a good point. That is a very good point. You got an answer for that, smart guy?"
"Sure, Skippy. You're going to take care of that problem for us."
"Oh, I am. And how am I going to do that? Maybe you weren't paying attention, so I'll summarize the problem for you," he said almost gleefully. "Starships carry drones, which contain the ship's flight recorder data. When a ship is destroyed or seriously damaged, one or many of those drones are ejected. They are tiny, and they are stealthed. Our sensor field will not be able to detect all the drones, and that, Joey my boy, is the problem. The Theranan will eventually send a ship to find out what happened to their precious surveyor and its escorts. I am hoping, of course, to fool their sensors into thinking our ship is a Gerapha cruiser, but that is not guaranteed to work."
"Not a problem, Skippy. You can handle that easily."
"Hmm. Since I left my magic unicorn back on Paradise or somewhere, how am I supposed to find an unknown number of stealthed drones, smart guy?"
"Simple, Skippy. By asking them to tell us where they are."
There was a pause before Skippy spoke again, maybe while he tried to figure out what my idea was. "Perhaps I need to explain the concept of stealth to you again, Joe. No, I understand." Adams took in a sharp breath.
"Sir, I might know what you're thinking."
"Oh, this is going to be good," Skippy laughed. "Go ahead, Sergeant Adams. Enlighten me, please."
She looked at me and I nodded, so she leaned forward to speak.
"Skipster."
"Skipster?" he asked, surprised.
"Skippy, then," Adam said with a wink. "These drones are stealthed to prevent an enemy locating them. but they will respond to a signal, the correct coded signal from a Thoranan ship, correct?
Yeah, duh. They wouldn't be much good otherwise.
Again, the problem is...
Oh, shit. I laughed.
You get it now, Skippy?
He gave another heartfelt sigh. When I load a virus into the Thoranan computer to make the ship drop off a drone before it jumps, with that drone containing their rendezvous coordinates, I am also supposed to download the drone retrieval codes, right?
Uh-huh, I said.
You got it. Then we'll jump to wherever those ships went on their way to the rendezvous. You send a signal for those drones to ping us their location.
You can do that, Skippy? Adams asked.
That? Yes, I can do that. Damn it, you monkeys think you're so smart.
Sergeant Adams, I thought I hated Colonel Joe the worst, but you're moving up the list.
I'm honored, Adams said mockingly.
After I tell the drones to ping us their location, we use them for target practice? Skippy asked.
No, I don't want to destroy them, I said quickly.
Huh. All right, apparently I'm still missing something here.
Skippy's voice had a convincing undertone of puzzlement.
We're not going to destroy them, I explained. Those drones aren't going to blow our cover story. They're going to sell our cover story for us. After you locate and access them, you are going to alter their flight logs so all the drones contain data showing their ships were attacked by a Jirapha task force, whatever number and types of ships the Jirapha would most likely assign to such a mission.
Two light cruisers, Skippy stated.
Then you'll tell those drones to go silent again until a real Thoranan ship comes looking for them, if that ever happens. Whatever ship finds the drones will provide convincing data about that surveyor ship being destroyed by the Jirapha, and they will have no reason to suspect humans are involved. Those drones will sell the story for us.
Damn, Skippy grumbled unhappily. That actually is a fairly good plan. From a monkey. Amazing.
That plan is ingeniously devious. And I'm saying that as a compliment, Joe. I'm telling you. Once you're done playing soldier, you have a bright career ahead of you as a criminal mastermind. Or, you know, politics.
Skippy, I laughed. I would never do anything as sleazy as politics.
How about crime?
Crime we can talk about later. I have plenty of playing soldier to do first.
That did get me thinking.
When I signed up for the UNX4, my commitment was open-ended since we were at war. Now that Earth was, as far as UNEF Command knew at the moment, at peace... I had no idea how many more years I had until I could either leave the U.S. Army or re-up. My promotion to colonel was temporary, and everyone knew BS. My promotion to sergeant must have come with a commitment to some number of years, which I hadn't thought to ask about at Camp Alpha. It hadn't seemed important at the time. None of us expected to live long enough to care. Fighting aliens with our old trusty M4 rifles hadn't made us feel particularly hopeful about our life expectancy.
I have to admit, Skippy said, this barrel of monkeys has come up with some decent ideas.
Thank you, Skippy, I said guardedly. Knowing Skippy, he was going to add a snarky and insulting comment. He didn't disappoint me.
The reason I said decent rather than good is because these ideas are fine in theory. There is the tiny, tiny problem that we do not actually have a practical way for me to, as you so ignorantly assumed, hack into a Thoranan ship.
What? I asked in shock.
You took over this ship like, I snapped my fingers, that, in the blink of an eye.
How did you do that?
Uh-huh. Yep. Excellent observation skills you have there, Joe. I took over the Dutchman with my incredible awesomeness. However, since you apparently weren't paying attention at the time, the Thoranan brought the flower into a docking pad before I was able to seize control of their crude computer and put those idiot cyborgs into sleep mode. To do that, I had to be close, Joe. By close, I mean within about 20 kilometers. We got that close because the Flying Dutchman is a star carrier that expected to be taking a Kristang frigate aboard. None of the Thoranan ships in the Surveyor Task Force will let an unknown ship come that close to them.
Well, hell, Skippy. You could have told us that earlier before we wasted all this time dreaming up impossible plans.
But you were having so much fun, Joe, I didn't want to spoil it for you.
We're not here for fun, Skippy, I said between gritted teeth. We may be stupid monkeys to you, but the monkey brains on this ship and you are all we've got to come up with a plan to stop that surveyor ship from destroying our home.
You think this is funny. Pathetic would be more accurate, he mumbled.
But we do not.
You're telling me it is impossible for you to hack into these ships?
Again with you not paying attention, Joe. You seem distracted. Are you hungry, or is this just you being so perpetually horny you can't think straight?
I didn't say it was not possible. I said it was not easy. There is a huge difference between those. You really... Fortunately, Skippy interrupted me before I said something harsh.
Let me explain it to you, he said. We know those two support ships will be tanking up from the second planet in that system, a gas giant. We jump in behind the fourth planet, another gas giant. We jump in on the far side, so the planet will mask the gamma rays from our entry. Then someone takes me on a stealth flyby close to one of those support ships and I can hack in.
Oh, like flying by that relay station. That's a great idea, Skippy. We do the flyby in a dropship again? Nope, it's not going to be that easy, Joe. To hack in while I'm flying by, I will need to be within 4,000 kilometers at the closest approach. A dropship, even stealthed, would be detected at that range, and the Theranin wouldn't let a comet get within 4,000 kilometers of them. They'd either move it away or blast it to pieces. No dropship. Then how are we supposed to fly from one planet to another?
Well, you're not going to like this idea.
Chapter 30. He was right. I hated the idea. It was a terrible, awful, stupid idea from Skippy. It was also the only idea we had, damn it. We jumped in on the far side of a gas giant, a planet that was a quarter of the way across the star system from the planet where the Theranin support ships were taking on fuel. With the Dutchman in stealth mode, we let our orbit take us around the planet, and Skippy picked up transmissions between the two support ships. The good news is those ships were alone. We'd been afraid they'd have a frigate or destroyer with them. The bad news is we arrived almost too late. One ship had already half-filled its fuel tanks and the other was not far behind its sister ship. We had to move quickly. Desai piloted the dropship with Lieutenant Shi of the Chinese Air Force as her co-pilot. I took Skippy with me, plus Giraud as my backup. In what I thought was an interesting maneuver, Desai burned the dropship's engines hard while we were on the far side of the gas giant, then cut power back as we slingshotted around the planet and escaped from its gravity well. After another 3 hours of relatively gentle thrust, we were moving faster than a speeding bullet, on course to intercept the tanker ship as it hung in low orbit around the second planet. To remain undetected, we could not burn the engines for deceleration until both tankers were on the other side of the gas giant, which was complicated, because while we were racing through interplanetary space, the first tanker finished taking on fuel had moved away. We were cutting this close. Very close. There was only a 12-minute window to fire the engines before the orbits of one or the other support ships brought them around into view. Desai decelerated us to the proper speed in a high-G burn maneuver that busted a blood vessel in my left eye and gave me a nosebleed while those ships were hidden by the planet. Then she cut off the engines, and I attached my helmet, stepped outside, and gently pushed off to drift away. Skippy's idea, that I didn't like at all, was for someone to get into a Kristang spacesuit with Skippy and a jetpack. Skippy was irritated that we called the thing a jetpack instead of an individual maneuvering unit. His argument was that the thing technically did not have jets. We ignored him. It was a jetpack. Jetpacks were cool. IMU was not cool. A stealthed suit, even with a jetpack, was small enough to fly past a lowly tanker ship as close as 4,000 kilometers without being detected. In addition to the jetpack, my suit had a waist belt with an attachment point for Skippy and a portable stealth field generator. The idea was for someone in a suit to take Skippy on a flyby using the jetpack to make small course corrections as needed. The suit wearer and Skippy would then swing around the other side of the planet, fire the jetpack to climb into a slightly higher orbit where the dropship would be to retrieve them eventually. That was the plan, anyway. This idiotic plan was why I was hanging seemingly motionless in space with the target gas giant planet a basketball-sized orange blob in front of me. With gentle puffs of thrusters, Desai moved the dropship safely away from me, then she fired the engines to make the dropship swing much wider around the planet. "Captain Desai, can you hear me?" I asked. "Loud and clear, Colonel," she replied. "Skippy, we're communicating through the micro-wormhole." We were still close enough to the dropship that it might be able to pick up my faint transmission directly. "Yes, affirmative. Wormhole is active and operating nominally," Skippy reported. To allow us to talk to the dropship without the Theranin detecting our transmissions, Skippy had done his micro-wormhole trick again. One end of the wormhole was near the dropship and moved with that spacecraft. The other end stayed 150 meters behind Skippy. According to that super-smart beer can,
It was extremely unlikely the Theranan ships could detect either our very low-power transmissions or the faint radiation from the micro-wormhole. That was good, because small as one person in a suit was, I was way too large to fit through that super-tiny wormhole. Great. To be safe, Desai, we won't transmit if either of those Theranan ships are in line of sight to us.
Understood, Colonel, she agreed.
Cutting thrust in 3, 2, 1, now. The first Theranan ship should be coming around the planet in 2 minutes, 40 seconds. The sensors built into my suit were not sensitive enough to detect the ships yet. I had to take Desai's word for it. For the next 4.5 hours, I zoomed through empty space, the planet ahead of me growing larger in my vision. Really, I was racing through space, only there was no sensation of movement. No reference point, except the giant planet. Skippy and I chatted only occasionally. There wasn't much to talk about other than him instructing me to make tiny course corrections with the jetpack. After 4 hours, he told me to activate the stealth field. The stealth unit required a lot of power, and the generator we brought along could only supply power for a couple hours. If all went well, a couple hours of stealth is all we would need. If all went well. There's the first ship, Skippy announced. Right on time. It hasn't altered its orbit at all. Picking up ship-to-ship transmissions. There are still only those 2 support ships in system. We had been concerned there might be a warship escorting the tankers. There didn't appear to be. This deep inside Theranan territory, they didn't see a need to escort such low-value ships. A symbol for the first ship popped up on the inside of my helmet faceplate. It was hugging the crescent of the planet, climbing away slowly. We waited, and a symbol for the second ship popped up. It was still too far away for me to see with the naked eye.
Uh-oh, Skippy said. We've got a problem. A big, big problem.
What is it? They detected us?
No, those crappy ships couldn't see us yet, even if we were lighting off fireworks out here.
The second ship has been slower to take on fuel because of a fault with its drogue, the unit at the bottom of the fuel line it has lowered into the atmosphere. The fault has gotten worse. The Theranan have decided to retract the fuel line now, even though the ship's tanks are only 82% full.
Yeah, so?
I couldn't see how a fly-in gas station was a problem for us. So as soon as the drogue is clear of the atmosphere, that ship will be changing course to join the other ship, climbing out of orbit to jump distance. From its transmissions, I can predict the ship's course, and it is a very big problem. The jetpack does not have enough fuel to alter our course sufficiently that we can intercept that ship, not within 4,000 kilometers. We'll be too far away for me to hack into their systems. He sounded genuinely sad.
I'm sorry, Joe. We're going to miss this chance.
Crap.
This is our only chance.
You sure where that ship is going?
Yes, I am sure. The degree of uncertainty is not great enough to make us intercepting that ship to be a realistic possibility. It is simple orbital mechanics, Joe. The jetpack does not contain enough fuel.
Force equals mass times acceleration? I asked.
Yeah. I'm surprised you know. Our problem right now isn't the acceleration part, it's the mass, right?
Correct. Between me, you, the stealth field generator, and the suit, the jetpack can't manage to provide the delta V, the change in velocity, for us to alter course sufficiently to come close to that ship.
The problem isn't you either. It's me and this suit.
Mostly the suit. It has more than twice your mass, Joe.
Yeah? I can't take the suit off, so...
I reached down to unbuckle the fasteners that held my suit attached to the jetpack.
Joe, what are you doing? We need that jetpack, you dumb monkey!
The jetpack came loose. I swung it around in front of me and held it steady with my legs. Although in zero gravity it weighed nothing, its substantial mass made it awkward to move around.
No, Skippy, you need the jetpack.
The stupid tool belt fastener was on the side, not the front, and to undo it, I had to turn a knob to expose the button. It was intended as a safety feature, I'm sure. Right then, it was a pain in the ass. The tool belt finally came undone, and I pulled it tightly around the jetpack, trying to keep the mass of Skippy and the stealth field generator centered.
There. Done.
I let go of the jetpack with my legs, and it hung right in front of me.
Tell me how to program a course into this thing, I asked.
The jetpack had a limited ability to be controlled remotely from a module strapped to my left wrist.
A course.
Where? Skippy sounded panicked.
Back to the dropship.
No, Skippy, I explained patiently. A course to take you within 4,000 kilometers of that tanker ship.
You said it.
We're going to miss this chance if the jetpack has to move my mass. This is our only chance, Skippy. Our only chance to follow that ship to the Surveyor and destroy it. Our only chance to stop the Theranin from reaching my home planet and killing everyone. You are not going to miss that chance.